To everyone. This morning I would like to share with you a message, and the title is Do You Want to Get Well? This is actually part of a sermon series I had preached on starting last year, and the series is questions God asks us. So this morning, as we listen to this message, I want you to consider this question that Jesus asked many, many years ago. Do you want to get well? Okay, I want to ask you this question. What can a person achieve in 38 years? Why don't you turn to your neighbor, okay? And share with your neighbor what your thoughts are. What can a person achieve in 38 years? What accomplishments can you have in this very long span of time? Start a family. Have children, establish your career. So what can a person achieve in 38 years? Actually, a lot. A lot. Especially if one is motivated and disciplined. Brother Daniel is here. Brother Daniel is Singaporean, okay? How long did Lee Kuan Yew, how long did it take Lee Kuan Yew to transform Singapore from a backwater to a modern cosmopolitan society, from first world to third world? Singaporeans, do you know? Don't know. 35 years. Yesterday, for some reason, you know, I watched this forum where Lee Kuan Yew was asked this question by some Indian nationals. You know, if you were to take charge of Singapore, would you be able to replicate for India what you did for Singapore? If you want to know the answer, ask me afterwards, yeah? What about Charlie Kirk? Charlie Kirk dropped out of college after just one term at the age of 18. And he co-founded with a friend this organization known as Turning Point USA. And Charlie Kirk was credited with helping Donald Trump become president. I don't know if you think that was a good thing or not. But he rallied the young people, he engaged them. Before this year in September, his life was tragically ended by a bullet. In 13 years, he achieved so much more than any individual would have, could have achieved in many lifetimes. Jesus, how many years did it take Jesus to complete his ministry? 3 years. 3 years. Now I want you to imagine that you have had your 38 years just wasted. Not having an opportunity to make a mark in life. No dreams, no success, no accomplishments, no milestones, just disappointment. 38 years, all wasted. I counted, this is my 37th year in education. I like to think that I've accomplished a lot in my 37th year. Yes. Wasted time. That was the reality for one particular person. One particular person at a pool at Bethesda. For almost four decades, he lay by the pool, probably every day, hoping to be healed. But all the time watching life pass him by. Yet, despite the disappointment, despite the pain, despite the disability, there was still a flicker of hope. That was why he went to the pool, hoping to be healed. And we all know the story. It was there that he met Jesus. And had his life redeemed. So you may think, you know, today I'm not sick. I want to ask you, are you sure? Are you sure? Maybe you have more in common with that disabled man. You are unwell. You are paralyzed. Perhaps your paralysis is not physical, but it is emotional. It is mental. It is spiritual. Maybe you feel like life has passed you by. People have accomplished much, but you have very little to show. Your years feel wasted. Your dreams buried. And your disappointments heavy. Now you are here in church. You go to prayer meetings. You go to healing rallies. You go to conferences. You still show up because you still hold on to some hope, no matter how fragile it is. And the good news is this. Jesus meets us in our brokenness. He meets us in our weakness. He meets us in our waiting. Sometimes he doesn't have to touch us. He just needs to speak. And our life is redeemed. Let's look at scripture. John chapter 1. Sometime later, Jesus went up to Jerusalem for one of the Jewish festivals. Now there is in Jerusalem near the Sheep Gate a pool, which in Aramaic is called Bethesda, which is surrounded by five covered colonnades. Here a great number of disabled people used to lie. The blind, the lame, the paralyzed. One who was there had been an invalid for 38 years. When Jesus saw him lying there and learned that he had been in that condition for a long time, he asked him, "Do you want to get well?" You know, when Jesus saw that person, that particular invalid, and when he learned how long he had been suffering, you know, his heart was moved with compassion. I think about the time when the many times I walked by people asking for money in the streets, and I would just walk by. But this man caught Jesus' attention. When Jesus learned of his plight, He was moved with compassion. That is the heart of Jesus. He felt the weight of the man's pain and sorrow. Jesus is Jesus is easily moved by the misery people feel, and that's the truth. But then Jesus did something very strange. Instead of telling the man, "Be healed, pick up your mat, walk," Jesus asked what seems like a very, very strange question: "Do you want to get well?" Do you find this question strange? Do you want to get well? Why would Jesus ask that question? And if I'm allowed to say, I would say that's a stupid question to ask. That's a confrontational question. What was Jesus really thinking? You know, to a lot of people, this kind of question is actually offensive. Imagine saying to a person who has suffered for 38 years, cannot walk, cannot help himself, "Do you want to get well?" It's like going to the hospitals and going up to the patients waiting to see the doctor, "Do you want to get well?" "Of course I want to get well. Why would I be in the hospital?" You know, of course the man could have responded with sarcasm, "Of course I don't want to get well, Jesus. I love being paralyzed." I can imagine he might have scolded Jesus, used expletives perhaps. Or if he were a violent man, he had the strength, he would probably have beaten up Jesus for asking him a stupid question. But the truth is this: Jesus never asked foolish questions. You and I might, but not Jesus. In every word of Jesus, every word that passes from his lips carries purpose, purpose, and power. So why did he ask this question? Can I suggest to you this? The invalid needed to confront this question himself. And what is the question? Do I really want to get well? Jesus is ready to heal. So the question is, do I really want to get well? This question is about desire. It is about desire. It is about hope. It is about faith. And so you notice the answer the invalid gave Jesus. This was what he said: "Sir, I have no one to help me into the pool when the water is stirred. While I'm trying to get in, someone actually goes down ahead of me." Did he say yes? He didn't. Did he say no? He did not. He did not directly answer Jesus' question. So what was he actually saying? I want to suggest to you, from his answer, he probably meant two things. Let's look at the first possible reason why he answered this way. Yes, but. Yes, I want to get well, but. And so what the invalid really expressed was not desire, but despair. The but shows despair. He expressed not faith that he will be healed, but frustration because his hope for healing was in a pool, in circumstances, but not yet in the one standing in front of him asking him this question, do you want to get well? So the invalid believed that healing was only possible under certain and specific conditions. Now, if you have the NIV, you would notice there is no verse 4. There is no verse 4 in John chapter 5. It appears as a footnote. But if you have other translations of the Bible, like the New King James Version, you find this verse, which explains why sick people gathered at the pool. Verse 4 from the New King James Version. For an angel went down at a certain time into the pool and stirred up the water. Then whoever stepped in first after the stirring of the water was made well of whatever disease he had. So there was a superstitious belief among the people. The pool at Bethesda had gained a reputation as a place of healing, famous for healing, based on this idea, this belief that an angel from time to time will come down and stir the waters and the first person in will be healed. And so if I were to paraphrase the man's response to Jesus, it would be this. Yes, I want to get well. Yes. Otherwise, I wouldn't be here. But for me to be healed, I must wait for the angel to stir the water. And when that happens, I must somehow get in first. So the kiasu mentality did not originate from Singapore, right? Started there. Get in first before anyone else. But the problem is, I have this problem. I have no one to help me into the pool. So the invalid did not place his confidence in Jesus the healer. So what did he place his confidence in? In a method. Waiting for the stirring of the waters by the angel. So he had reduced healing to a place. To a place and time. Secondly, he placed his confidence in human effort. He must show the effort. He must put in the effort to get into the pool first. And thirdly, in assistance from others. Because of his disability, someone needed to help him. He was helpless. And so his focus was on conditions. For healing to take place, there are conditions that must be met. So his focus was on conditions. And secondly, his focus was on limitations. He limited himself. There was a limit to what he could do to get healed. So his focus was not on the person Jesus who was standing before him. His trust was in a method, a system of healing, rather than in God's power available through Christ. You know, I remember Jesus' encounter with the Samaritan woman when he asked her for a drink of water. And remember what Jesus said to her? Jesus answered her, "If you knew the gift of God and who it is that asks you for a drink, you would have asked him and he would have given you living water. If you only knew." If the disabled man only knew the one who was standing in front of him, the one who is the source of healing, all healing, healing in totality. If only he knew. My brothers and sisters, sometimes unknowingly, we do not totally depend on Jesus for healing. We place our confidence in methods, in efforts, and this will only lead to frustration. This will leave us limited and dependent on others. Confidence in Jesus sets us free. Because Jesus is not bound by conditions. Jesus is not bound by rituals. We need to do a certain thing. We need to pray a certain way. You know, unfortunately, today many still place their trust in methods. Self-help formulas, traditions, even religious rituals. You know, maybe you had a chance to go to Jerusalem and you buy anointing oil, you know, and believe that the anointing oil will heal you. God heals, not oil. I don't mean any disrespect. You know, sometimes, or many times, we set conditions for our healing, especially in the wounds of the heart, in the wounds of the mind. What are these? Condemnation, guilt, shame, bitterness, anger, unforgiveness. And so we say to ourselves, I can only be healed if this person apologizes to me. I can only be healed if that person compensates me. I can only be healed if that person is punished for the wrong he did to me. That's setting conditions. But the truth is, Christ does not heal on our terms. He heals on His. His grace is not held back by whether someone says sorry or not, or whether justice is served the way we want it to be served. Because at the cross, every debt was already paid, every wound already carried, every injustice already answered. So the question is this: do I really want to be healed? Do I want to keep holding on to my conditions? Or will I let go and allow Christ to be enough? Healing does not wait for others to be changed. It begins when you surrender to Him. So let me suggest another possible reason for the invalid's answer. First is yes, but. Secondly is no. No, I don't want to be healed. Ironically, some people just do not want to get well. I don't know if you agree with me, but I agree 100%. Some people just don't want to be healed. In this article by Dennis R. Atwood in preaching.com, you know, the title is Change, Do You Want to Get Well? He made this remark. He said, 38 years is a long time to be able to settle into a kind of comfort and safety, even in misery. You know, I suffer from cervical spondylosis. You know, I'm on painkillers. I'm on medication to numb my nerves so that, you know, they don't flare up. And every time I go for my follow-up consultation, the doctor will ask me, so how are you? I say, I'm okay. I've got used to it. Even now, I still feel pain. Right now, I still feel pain. But I'm used to it. It's okay. I've accepted it. I have become comfortable with my health situation. Am I completely healthy? No. But I've become comfortable. Some of you have read Trevor Hudson's book. You know, I think those who are in the Going Deep group. But Trevor Hudson, in his book, Questions God Asks Us, he wrote about this disabled man. So let me share a short part of his book. Was he, meaning the disabled man, really willing to let go of his old way of life? Or had he become so accustomed to the benefits of being paralyzed that deep down he didn't really want to change? First time you hear being paralyzed have benefits. After all, he had people, friends or relatives who fetched and carried for him, people who fed and took care of him. He didn't have to take responsibility for his life. He didn't have to take responsibility for his life. Others had to do that for him. Perhaps there was a certain amount of feeling comfortable with his situation. To be healed would mean having to get up, and take hold of life again. Pastor Ray Stedman shared in his many years of being a pastor, he said this, I know many people today who do not want to be healed. This is a pastor speaking. They do not want to receive divine help in their problems. They do not want to be helped out of their weakness. They love their weakness. They love their helplessness. They are always craving the attention of others through their helplessness. They sometimes flee assuming responsibility for their own lives. They flee assuming responsibility for their own lives. It's easier to blame other people. Take a good look at yourself. And he said, I have even seen people turn their backs on a way of deliverance they knew would work because they did not want to be healed. You know, brothers and sisters, the word well, do you want to get well, is this Greek word. I don't know how to pronounce it, okay? But it's the word from which we get the word healthy. So when Jesus asked him this question, do you want to get well? He's actually asking something that carries a deeper meaning than just physical healing. It has a spiritual meaning. It means to be truly and completely and holistically restored. Not just physical, but totally, completely, truly healed. It's entering a state where the body is made sound, where the will is made sound, and the spirit is made sound. We know that God is all-powerful. He can do all things. But is it possible that even God himself can do very little for us? If we remain content with our brokenness. Too often, we plod along in our debilitating condition. We long to be healed, but yet we quietly resist the very change we claim to desire. I think you may have heard of this quote by the poet Carl Sandburg, who captured this inner conflict, wanting to be healed but resisting healing at the same time. He said this: there is an eagle in me that wants to soar, and there is a hippopotamus in me that wants to wallow in the mud. Want to soar, but want to stay in the mud. So why wouldn't people want to get well? Because wellness is not just freedom. Wellness is responsibility. Dennis Edwards said, being well holds more responsibilities. Being well holds more accountability. You know, healing invites us to rise, invites us to live differently, invites us to embrace the weight of what wholeness truly demands. And what does this mean? Jesus explains. Then Jesus said to him, get up, pick up your mat and walk. At once the man was cured, he picked up his mat and walked. You know, Jesus wants to heal us, he wants to make us whole. Without waiting for this man to say, yes, I want to be healed, Jesus healed him. Jesus made him whole. Jesus did not even touch him. He used only his words. In one sentence, Jesus gave three commands. You know, to us, you know, it's just a simple command. But in that sentence, there are three commands that carry profound meaning. Get up, pick up your mat, and walk. Each phrase actually reveals a principle of lasting healing. So the first is this. Jesus said to the man, get up. There is no strength in his leg. How can he get up? Jesus is telling him, do the impossible thing. Jesus asked the man to do what he could not do, what he had tried for 38 years to accomplish, which is to get up. He couldn't do it. And why would Jesus tell this person, this helpless person, to get up? Because he wanted to shift this person's focus from method, his faith from methods, from human effort, and place his faith fully on Jesus. And Jesus was actually telling him, I know you cannot do it, but I can. I know you cannot do it, but I can. And the moment the man responded in faith, what happened? Something miraculous happened. Strength flowed into his body. into his bones, into his muscles, into his nerves that had been useless for decades. They suddenly became alive. Instantly, on the very spot, he was healed. Pick up your mat. It's removing the possibility of relapse. Jesus didn't stop at get up. He added, pick up your mat. There's this pastor by the name of G. Campbell Morgan. He explains, Jesus said this in order to make no provision for a relapse. Jesus knew the human heart. See, the man might have thought, I'm healed today, but just in case the healing wears off, I better leave my mat here. I might need it tomorrow. So if the man had not picked up the mat, if the man had left the mat there, he would have been tempted to return. You know, Jesus was teaching him and us today something very, very important. If you want to walk in freedom, if you want to walk in freedom, don't leave an open door back to your old life. So what do? You burn your bridges. If you're an alcoholic, pour out your alcohol. If you're addicted to drugs, throw them away. Cut ties with destructive influences that drag you back. Bury the hatchet. Forgive your enemy. And then tell someone you trust that you have made a new start so that they can help you stay on it. You know, many people experience God's touch. This morning, I'm sure God touched you. But because they leave the past, they cling to the past, they fall right back. And that's why Jesus said, take up your bed. In actual fact, he's saying, close the exit door. Remove the fallback plan, and then walk. Don't expect to be carried. Don't depend on others to keep you going. Of course, the church family, the faith community is vital, but at some point, you must walk. You must walk in the new strength, in the all-sufficient grace that Christ has given you. I think for those of you who have been following the Lord for a while, you know that healing is not just a moment, it's a journey. But notice, if Jesus gives you the power to get up, to rise, he also gives you the power to keep walking every day. And this power and he will always be with you. So this is the truth. If you want to be healed, do what seems impossible. He is the one who makes everything possible for you. Secondly, cut ties with your past so that you will not experience a relapse. And then finally, Jesus expects us to keep walking because his strength is enough for every step forward that we take. And this is how Jesus makes us whole.